So dozens of leaked Defense Department classified documents have been posted online, revealing U.S. spying on Russia's war machine in Ukraine, a secret assessment of Ukraine's combat power, as well as intelligence gathering in America's allies, including South Korea and Israel. Highlights from the documents include the fact that Russia's private mercenary outfit, the Wagner Group, has sought to purchase weapons from NATO's member Turkey, and that the group is considering recruiting more convicts for the war in Ukraine. Additionally, a document marked secret examines why Ukrainian bombs equipped with the U.S. made guidance systems known as Joint Direct Attack Munitions, or JDAMs, have failed recently. South Korea has concerns about providing artillery shells to the U.S. to replenish America's supplies, as officials worried about the ammunition would end up in Ukraine's military. The document marks secret assets pathways for Israel to provide lethal aid to Ukraine, providing hypothetical situations that might drive Israel from its balancing act between Kiev and Moscow. The leadership of Israel's Mossad Foreign Intelligence Service encourages staff to take part in anti-government protests that have swept Israel, according to one document. What are your thoughts on the story?
Well, first of all, anything marked secret, it's basically got the classification level of anything that's on TikTok, right? So, because to what we were talking about before, the government casting a wide net, there's a lot of overclassification that goes on, right? And but secret is your lowest level of classification. And you look at this and you think, again, because you gotta, it's like an investigation, right? You don't build your investigation on a theory, right? You base it on evidence, on facts, right? Otherwise, you're by the time you get done, it's just on shaky ground. So, when you're doing something like this, and it's a counterintelligence issue, and you're trying to figure out, you know, is this a genuine leak? If so, that's a fairly simple process. You figure out who had access to the information. In today's world, a lot of people have access, right? We came out of 9/11, and one of the things they talked about was, you know, there wasn't enough sharing of intelligence. So guess what? We overshare. And so in part, that's a problem. But you look at this and you think, okay, what are they talking about here? You know, some of the documents talked about Russia. Oh, we're going to start a propaganda campaign in Africa. No shit, Sherlock. Of course they are, right? Or they're talking about the JDAMs not being, you know, as effective. Well, who does that benefit when you talk about this? So you start looking at the information that's in these documents, and you have to keep an element of this is on one side, you have to think, okay, is there a chance that this is a, you know, covert action campaign by the Russians to put this information out there? Because a lot of it does, you know, hey, look, if we put an article in there or a document in there about the South Koreans being a little bit iffy on providing shells, if we talk about Egypt's going to sell Russia, you know, weapons, if we talk about the UAE coming together with an agreement with all that shit, you know, I'm not sure that, you know, there's not a possibility here that it is a disinformation campaign. If it's not, if they're authentic documents, and quite frankly, the government already knows that, right? You know, they're just not telling us. You know, when John Kirby stands up there and goes, well, we don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know
yeah.
whether these are authentic or not. Of course, bullshit. Of course you do.
Yeah.
You know exactly where these things, you know, came from, what office originated them, mm-hmm. right? Who wrote them? You know, you've got all this material stored securely, or at least you did, if it's authentic. And now
how much of this, Mike, is, like, if you know where it came from, but if you tell everybody where it came from, you're publicly humiliated. So you have to act like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense or not. It's kind of like saving face.
Yeah, no, it does. I mean, because look, this is anytime you have a leak of intelligence, it's embarrassing, right? I mean, it's embarrassing and operationally damaging on several different fronts, right? Our allies, you know, if this is authentic and these documents are, and if they are authentic, then we've already told our allies, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about, well, we have this discussion, you know, with our allies over the weekend, well, you know, this is playing out after the fact. So if they are in fact authentic, our allies already know that they're authentic, and so they're already looking at, you know, what potential damage occurred from this. But you're right. Anytime this happens, it's embarrassing, right? And yet. You're never going to get the potential for this sort of thing to happen down to zero, right? You're never going to completely eliminate the risk of an intelligence leak.
Yeah, I'm reading all the stories by different papers to see what they're saying. New York Times, clues left online might aid SEC investigation, officials say. The Guardian, U.S. intelligence leak. What do we know about the top secret documents? Moscow Times, five things the leaked Pentagon documents reveal about Russia's army. CNN, leaked Pentagon documents lingered on social media despite urgent national security concerns. CBS News, Pentagon documents leaked. Biden, everybody is pretty much saying the same thing,
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So if everybody is generally saying the same thing, it kind of minimizes a bit of gamesmanship, right? Or to you, you kind of maybe sitting there saying, well, it's Fox, CNN, all these guys that don't agree with each other, they're all playing the, you know, safe game of saying, we don't know yet what it is, but who could it be?
Yeah.
It could be these guys.
Yeah.
It could be those guys. And the allegations, everyone makes their own allegations, but nobody knows where it's really coming from.
You've got it's like every decision tree, right? No matter what you're talking about, there's not that many branches on it. These are either authentic or they're not. And if they're not, it's a disinformation campaign. So who the hell would have done it? Well, you know, that's another decision. You know, it would probably be the Russians. But you have to make that, you know, that decision very quickly in a counterintelligence investigation. And my point being is that they already know.
Of course. Right?
So they're just, you know, they're not telling us.
I got a question for you, Mike.
Yeah.
So apparently these documents were sitting on Discord for like a month. And then it ended up somehow in a Minecraft computer game. This is something out of like fantasy land.
Yeah.
But when I hear of leaks and this type of stuff, automatically I go to, you know, Edward Snowden, WikiLeaks, Julian Assange. Mm-hmm. You know, this person right here, they don't know who it is, if it is a person or if it's some sort of agency disinformation campaign. Mm-hmm. Is this leaker, is he going to be considered a traitor? Is there going to be some sort of whistleblower hero type thing that gets attached to him? Yeah. What's your opinion on that?
It'll be all over the spectrum, right? I mean, there are people that consider, you know, Snowden a hero, right? And I understand where they're coming from. There are other people that consider him a traitor, right? And I get that, you know. But with this, look, it's not the first time that classified documents, either ours or from our allies, have ended up in... as bizarre as it sounds, in sort of the gaming community,
yeah,
right? And maybe there's, I don't know, maybe there's some connection that we can figure out between people who spend a lot of time in the gaming world and, you know, individuals who have access to classified
documents. Computer hackers and people that sit in front of screens all day.
Yeah.
IT.
Yeah. So, and you know, it's, again, you can't, because of the need to share information, right? And there is a legitimate need to do that. You just have to be careful about how you do it. You don't want to, you know, again, you don't want to make such a large playing field that you have no control over what the hell you're doing. But because of that, and because it's just a human endeavor, you're always going to have the potential for a problem like this. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have consequences for it, mm-hmm. then you're increasing the likelihood that it could happen again. You're not minimizing the likelihood. And the problem we've always had with this sort of thing is there's, you know, it's a shifting landscape in terms of from one administration to the next, how they deal with this sort of thing. It's certainly not the first time. It won't be the last time. But if you don't have consequences for people who act out against agreements that they've already signed, right? You got to take that very seriously. You sign agreements, right?
100%.
Yeah. And so... You know, and that goes to your grave, right? You don't, you know, it's not that you think, well, I stopped working or I'm not getting enough hugs at work or, boy, I don't agree with that policy, so fuck my secrecy agreements.
Yeah.
You know, that's where you have to, you know, you have to have consequences.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that because, Mike, not to cut you off, Adam, cause like at the base that I was at Malmstrom Air Force Base, where that's where the Chinese spy balloon was hovering at over my base. It was biggest.
But you didn't have anything to do with that.
No. I think allegedly.
Yeah.
But the biggest threat wasn't like a nuclear attack. It was the insider threat.
Yeah.
Our insider threat was the number one threat as people knowing about the information. But I agree with you 100%. You're supposed to stay quiet, then all of a sudden you're leaking shit. So Mike, are you saying that you probably, not probably, but is it almost like a definite? They know who the hell did it, whoever leaked it.
I think so. I mean, just given, you know, when you look at forensic capabilities now, you know, nothing is completely deleted. And particularly when you're talking about the power of the government, you know, to pursue an investigation. Now, whether they're organized enough to actually do it, I don't know. But I think that they'll sort this one out. I don't think that we're not talking about Lex Luthor here. And I think they'll also sort out, and they already have, if this is disinformation. So if these documents are not accurate, I think they would come out relatively quickly and say that. But if there is an investigation into individuals who have been responsible for this and they're authentic, it'll probably take a little bit longer for them to talk.
My last question on this is, I feel like all country spy, government spy, and this is talking about whether it's the CIA, it's MI6, whether it's the Mossad, whether it's the GRU in Russia, KGB, India, Pakistan, France, every country spies. And I don't think it's that concerning that we're spying on Russia. I think that kind of goes with the story. I mean,
you would hope we are.
Yeah, you hope we are. Yeah. Yeah. I don't even think it's that big of a concern we're spying on Ukraine and Zelensky. It's like, buddy, if we're giving you a fucking couple $1 billion, just believe we're kind of checking in on you.
Yeah.
But how big of a concern is that they're finding out that we're spying on South Korea, our ally, mm-hmm. Israel, our biggest ally in the Middle East, Mossad? How much validity is it there, and how big of a concern is that?
Well, look, I know this will come as a shock, but Mossad pays attention to what their allies are doing, right?
Mm-hmm,
so
sure.
Mossad has an effort to understand what we're doing, right? Does that mean they're collecting intelligence on us? Yeah. And does that mean the South Koreans, to the degree that they have the resources and abilities, are they doing the same thing? Yes. On their allies? Of course. It is, it's understood, right? Now, there are limits to that, right? But even with our closest allies, there's an understanding that you trust but verify, right? I mean, because every nation acts in its own best interests, right? Now, your efforts are obviously far more aggressive when we're talking about nation states that are not aligned with us, right? So no surprise. But we better hope. People always say that. They say, well, we're doing the same damn thing, right? We're doing mm-hmm. this. And, well, yeah, you better hope we are, because this, as much as you may want to, this is not a world where we're a community of nations, right? And we're all looking out for each other, right? And then, unicorns are all flying out of our asses and we're all happy. And it's just not the way it works.
Let me ask this question. Do you think Putin or Xi feel like they can get things done negotiating with Biden? Do you think Xi and Russia think they can succeed in negotiations with Biden more than they would with Trump, more than they would with Obama, or somebody new like a DeSantis?
I think what they feel with Biden is that it's a known quantity, right? And I think I don't know whether they feel, that would be speculation on my part, how do they rate them in regards to who they can negotiate with better. But I do think that they feel as if Trump is more of an unknown quantity, and they can't really, look and come up with like a 3 to 5 year plan of what Trump's going to do.
So then wouldn't you want to keep Biden in office? If that guy is an unknown quantity because he's not predictable, if that is what you assess it to be, you almost want to keep this guy in office for another 6 years, don't you?
Well, based on, look, if all you're looking at is sort of a decision between Biden and Trump, and you look at Trump's time in office and you look at Biden's time in office, if I'm a head of a nation that's at odds with the U.S., I would prefer Biden, because I can more accurately predict, I think, in my opinion, where he's going to go, what his policies are going to be, how he's going to behave, right? And so, yes, I mean, I think you could make that argument. Trump was unpredictable, right? I mean, that's one of the reasons why he lost the election. People were tired of the chaos, right? But I think Biden's been in D.C. for what, 50 plus years, right?
For me, I wonder, because anytime a company has a CEO that didn't want to communicate, or I couldn't even get a sit down with them, I didn't like that. Which means I couldn't get things done. I would much prefer an asshole that was willing to sit with me than somebody that was the nicest guy but never called back, never emailed, and never had time to come and sit down and visit. It's as weird as that sounds.
Yeah.
Because, at least the asshole, what his agenda was. It's his company against yours. It's his protection. But the other guy was so like aloof, and you had to be very careful with the guys that were very aloof, okay? Mm-hmm. So I wonder if they sit there and they say, because let's put the blame on Russia. Let's say Russia's behind this thing. Because if Russia's using Israel and South Korea It's a form of dividing and conquering. You're pinning Israel against U.S. And so it's very strategic and brilliant if that's really what you're doing. And to be so good, you also threw some of your internal stuff of Russia to make sure people don't think you're the one that's doing it.
Which, if you look at it, is absolutely minimal. Right.
Right. I mean, it's not a big deal on their own.
Right. But, oh, my God. But they give a little bit. About, yeah. But it's again.
No question about it. It is very. Yeah. Let's just say if it is Russia, right, then if they're doing that to pin Biden against Israel and South Korea, and then maybe they're saying, you know what, this Trump guy, at least, you know, when he was there, NATO was not bothering us. He was not a fan of NATO. We're not a fan of NATO. You know, yes, the trade issues it is what it is, and we had to deal with that. Huawei, we had to deal with that. You know, I couldn't have attacked Ukraine under him. So do I really want this guy back? I can attack Ukraine under Biden. But at the same time, if Trump was here and if I attacked Ukraine under Biden, would they have sent $140 billion to Ukraine to help? Would Trump have sent money? I don't know if Trump would have sent money, but maybe Trump would have had a meeting with me within 24 hours to say, if you don't stop doing this, then. Yeah. So because to these guys, the way I'm processing it, who do you want at the helm? Mm-hmm. Do you want the guy that you can have a kneecap-to-kneecap conversation and negotiate? Or do you want the guy that is, you know, having worried about the ice cream he's going to have and you don't really know if you can have a real conversation? That's my biggest thing. Who do you want as an enemy? Sometimes I want the leader of the enemy to be somebody I can talk to, no matter how much I may not like the guy and how much we disagree.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an odd thing here in the U.S. I think maybe it's elsewhere, but this idea that you have to like the person in charge, right? I didn't like Trump. I don't like Trump necessarily. I think he's just too chaotic, and I think he's, you know, he's all over the map. I liked the policies, right? I liked the policies better.
Yeah.
I don't need to like the person necessarily. Yeah. I'm more interested in what are they doing, you know, as a leader. So, but with, you know, Putin, I'm sure, you know, Putin looked at Biden, and he remembered it was Obama Biden when they, you know, walked into Crimea. And there was no response, right? They took Crimea and during that administration. And, you know, there was no pushback really to speak of. And so they probably factor that into their calculation over Ukraine. I'm sure Putin was surprised at the monetary response, sort of the way the allies came together and said, because I figure their calculation was probably different. They probably thought the U.S. will not get quite so involved. They will not make quite the effort with NATO. But I you know, to that degree, his intelligence was clearly off. But I agree with you. I think, you know, if I'm looking at this, and if I'm Xi, and I think that I'm close to the top of the ladder here, I would much rather have somebody like President Biden in place, because again, I can look at him and I think I can map out and predict based on 50 plus years where he's going.
If that's the case, I won't do this because this hurts.
Mm.
That's the only thing.
Mm.
So if I'm sitting here thinking about you're doing this, I wouldn't do this because you're hurting the existing guy because you're giving more ammunition to the opposing side. I would let it roll rather than doing this to say, hey, because do you remember when Trump had to keep firing people in CNN and MSNBC would constantly say, there's a source within Trump administration.
Yeah.
What a terrible thing to do to a guy to confuse the crap out of him. Like, think about when they say, there's a player within the New England Patriots organizations that's leaking information to us at ESPN that there's a major fight and a fallout between Tom Brady and Bill. Like, those types of things. And you're Brady and Belichick. You're like, hey, guys, stop it. Yeah. We're good. We don't have any. But then in the back of your mind, you're like,
who's talking shit?
Is it that guy that I benched? Is it that guy that I didn't let do this?
Yeah.
Is it that guy that I didn't invite to the party? Is it that guy that wants to be traded? What is it? Regardless of how much bulletproof, strong, mentally tough you are, they get a little bit of your brain and you start thinking. So regardless, no matter how bulletproof this administration may be, they're going to say, who at the Pentagon wants Republican Trump to be there? That's not on our side. We got to fire this person. Who is that person? Is it general this? Is it general? Is it this person? Is that person? Mm-hmm. This really throws a wrench in the game.
Yeah,
oh,
that's all I'm saying. So I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, again, it's speculation at this point. Obviously, you know, to say that, you know, could it be a covert action campaign by the Russians? But I'm saying that when you do something like this, when you're investigating something like this, you have to keep all the options on the table until you prove otherwise. And you know, it's and again, I would argue that they already know. If they don't already know what's going on with this, then that is really disappointing.
Yeah, if you're doing it at the KGB level of Putin, trust me, Putin's got like a board of, I would assume, he's got a board of everybody who to poke, to piss off with who, and create a proxy here to unify here so we can become the good guy and call these guys and do a favor for that guy so he can connect us with this guy and get in front of, I mean, I'm assuming that's how these rooms, these conversations are going to be had. So when it's election time, you got nine more months left before we decide who the Republican candidate's going to be. So DeSantis, Trump, you know, who do you want to be the head? If you are really meddling in elections, I would be really more thought out of who I'd want to eliminate to create the enemy against.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So
let me just, I want to ask one question.
I want to go into another story. You make your point, and I'm going to go into
I want to go full conspiracy mode right now.
Oh,
just
here we
for
go.
A second.
Go, Adam.
In the last month.
Go, Adam.
I'm going into Vinny territory right
now. Let's go.
Last month, the Chinese spy balloons. A couple weeks after that, Putin hosts Xi in Moscow. Those two are having conversations. Putin's having a love affair with Xi, waving bye like
bye.
A schoolgirl.
Love you.
What kind of conversations do you think those two guys are having behind closed doors about America? How are we going to make America weak?
We're going to kill
you know, they're completely together at this point. Everything that's happening in Ukraine has basically, you know, thrown Putin right into Xi's arms. He basically said he was kind of jealous of the success China has had over the last few decades and wishes that type of success for Russia. What kind of conversations are happening behind closed doors, and how much plotting against America is in those conversations?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, the dynamic there is definitely that China's in the driver's seat. You know, Putin's in sort of the supplicant position here. And that relationship only goes so far, even though they said, there's no limits to our friendship. Well, bullshit, of course they are. You know, as soon as Xi decides it's not in their best interests, you know, to push this dynamic, but, you know, Xi's working to try to position China as the peacemaker around the globe, right? He's trying to increase sort of his diplomatic standing, as it were, I guess. And at the same time, he's rattling his saber over there at Taiwan. That's a delicate balance between those two things. Putin absolutely needs China on side. Mm-hmm. He's got almost nothing else, right? And the Iranians are selling them drones, and, you know, he's, you know, in Belarus. God, I got Belarus on my side. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, you know, what's China gaining? Gaining cheap energy, right? They're watching as both Russia and America, you know, empty their warehouses of military hardware.
Yep.
So there's a lot, you know, to be gained from China's perspective in all of this. And Russia is in a position where it needs to, you know, it needs to kind of do this.
Right. And speaking of perspective, by the way, you know, you just brought up the Taiwan thing. So it's the same. It's very similar. It's analogous to exactly what's happening. So Russia invades Ukraine. Mm-hmm. What was the response from America? What was the response from the rest of the world? The response from the EU? Okay. Now China invades Taiwan. What's the response going to be? We've seen this play out almost like war games. Those types of conversations must be taking place.
Mike, do you think any of this be, and I want to be completely honest, because I know you said Trump chaotic, and I understand where the chaos came from, because as he came in, fake Russia, all that, I'd be pissed off too. If I was him, I'd have a huge, huge chip on my shoulder. I'd be upset with the media and everything too. Do you think all our economy, recession, inflation, our dollars going bye-bye, militarily, where people are Afghanistan withdrawal and all that, do you think that the majority of this is happening under Trump, honestly? Do you think this is still the way that we are right now?
No. No, because I think the policies would have been different. Look, I mean, you know, COVID came along and kind of fucked things up, obviously.
Yeah.
But so that was an outlier. But I do think that if the economy, I mean, look, the first thing that Biden did, and he campaigned on it, you know, was shutting down the energy sector. Right. And, you know, one of the really strong elements of the Trump economy was oil and gas. Right. And national security and energy independence are completely linked. You can't separate the two. So, no, I think there's some significant differences that could have occurred. Do I think that Trump's going to, you know, win in 2024? I don't see how he gets to that number, because I don't think the people who who didn't vote for him the second time around, those people who were tired of the chaos, or the people who said, I've got to have enough. You know, Biden won because he wasn't Trump. He didn't win because he's a great 100%. Leader. Right? He lost two times before. He simply won because he wasn't Trump. But are those people who didn't vote for Trump that time, are they suddenly going to look around and go, yeah, I want some more of that Trump?
Yeah.
I don't see how he gets to that number.
You know, it's crazy you say that. So we're at the UFC fight this weekend in Miami, which, by the way, it broke when Dana White came out. Oh. He talked about how the last time they were in Miami, I think they did 436 at the door. This time they did 11.9 million, beating Madison Square Garden's record of 11.5 million. Okay. And he says Miami is what LA was 10 years ago. And he's selling Miami. He said, oh, we're definitely going to come back a year from now. That's the video of him talking. But, you know, anyways, we don't need to play it. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happened is while you're there, suddenly the crowd starts losing their mind.
You feel it.
And you hear everybody taking out their phones, and then all of a sudden, eruption.
It was nuts.
Because this guy named Donald Trump walked in. 21,000 phones were lifted. Everybody's got their cameras on, shaking hands. People are trying to spot. Is that Mel Gibson that just shook his hand?
Yeah.
That's Mike Tyson sitting next to him. Of course, Dana White, and, you know, he always speaks very highly of him because of how Trump helped him out at the beginning. And, you know, Masvidal gives a speech. Literally, the place is going crazy. We're right back there, by the way, in that video. So the place is going absolutely bonkers, right? Masvidal then starts fighting Burns. In the middle of the fight, camera goes on him. Trump. No one's watching the fight.
Nobody cares anymore.
Everybody. So the part becomes, now here's what the conversation becomes. Either 100% of UFC viewers are Republicans, or this guy has an energy about himself when he walks in that he's able to convert and magnetic energy. I even looked at Adam for a second. And Adam was in tears. Adam was
Adam, do you know what?
Adam was.
Can you tell the truth? Pat, you know what Adam said?
By the way, if you want me to tell the truth, I'll tell the truth.
Tell the truth.
Adam says, I'm not going to lie to you. You know how I feel about Trump. I just went from here to here.
Yes. It was cool.
Very weird feeling, right?
It was actually cool as shit.
But you know what? You know,
it was.
It was great.
But here's the part as well. The one thing about politics. We had, is it Ari Fleischer? George Bush's?
Yeah. Ari was
here. Yeah. And I said, why get into the game of politics? Like, why get into this? Like, he says, are you kidding me? And he says, unlike sports where there's a leader's bulletin, and you know if that guy scored a touchdown or did this or did that, politics, there is no leader's bulletin. It's who can sell their argument and their ideas better.
Wow.
It's the greatest competition. And he sold it in a way that I bet a few thousand kids that watch it, 20-year-old guys are watching saying, I want to get into politics. He sold the industry so well.
Wow.
So
Don't do it, kids.
So the point is, none of us have a clue what the hell we're talking about when it comes down to who's going to win, who's not.
Yeah.
You know, the reality of what happened with Biden won because they just didn't want Trump, right? You know, all those votes. Okay, fine. No problem. Well, now you got what you wanted. How happy are you now? Okay. When you have Sarah Foster? But, is that her name? Girl's name is Sarah Foster. Is that the actress's name? Did you hear what happened in San Francisco with this whole the Cash
David
App guy? No.
Daughter.
What's her daughter's name?
No, because Bob.
Go ahead. You were going to make your point before I played this for you.
Well, I was going to say, you know, you get what you get. I mean, look, Chicago is a perfect example of that, right? Mm-hmm. They got rid of Lori Lightfoot. And what did they bring in? Someone harder left, right? So I don't know. How do you explain that one?
If you can go on Twitter, Rob, so just recently, this lady, I want everybody to go send a tweet at this lady because apparently she just got off of Twitter. Just go to my account right there. Go right there. That's exactly the one I want you to do. So before you play the video, pause it before you play the video. Here's a lady, okay, zoom in a little bit so they can see it. Her name is Hillary Ronan. Just so you know what she does, she sits on the board. I think it's District 9. If you can go on Google and Google her, who she is, Hillary Ronan, two L's, Hillary Ronan, N-E-N, Hillary Ronan, N-E-N, there you go. Hillary Ronan, zoom in so we can see who she is. And I watch, this is such an interesting thing. Hillary Ronan is an American politician, attorney serving as a member of the San Francisco Board. Yeah, there you go, District 9, which includes the neighborhoods of Mission District, Bernal Heights, and Portola. Okay, and if you go a little lower so we know who she is, Democratic Party, She went to Berkeley, University of California, University of San Francisco, blah, blah, blah. Okay, great. Now go back to the tweet. So this lady here in 2000, and let me even send you the tweet because a lot of people haven't seen the tweet. This is a tweet she sends out. I don't know if I send it to you, Rob. If you have it, please show the tweet. I think I send that to you as well. It's this one right here. If you can just pull up the tweet, because a lot of times you see an image of a tweet and then the person goes back and deletes it. You can't find it. Well, luckily, I found the tweet and she's left it up. So just kind of pull it up.
Great.
If you send it to yourself by Hillary Ronan, the date of her tweet is, let me see what the date is. She sent this in 2020, to be exact on the date, August 16th, 2020. Do you have it? I text it to you, Rob. Yeah, I text it to you. You should have the text that I sent to you. I just put a thumbs up on it, Rob. If you can just pull that up, just put do copy paste and pull it up.
She's still in San Francisco.
Oh, you got to see this thing here. You got to see this thing here. What she says, Rob. If you're, let's see if you got it or not.
Because she's still Pat. She's still in.
Dude, you have to see what this woman says, and she's still in charge.
Here's a tweet. In charge. Okay.
So in 2020, this is her tweet. I want to make it clear that I believe strongly in defunding the police and reducing the number of officers on our force. For decades, we've had an imbalance in our city's budget with hundreds of millions of dollars going to San Francisco PD to have them do work they are not qualified to do.
Okay.
Look at the date, okay. August 16, 2020.
Okay, bookmark that.
By the way, they lowered the budget by $120 million, the mayor, during that time.
Okay.
So now go back to the tweet and watch her video of what she says. Go to the video of what she says. You just had the tweet up. Okay, play the clip.
This is her.
Watch this.
We've been begging for more footbeats and for more officers in the Mission District.
2 weeks
ago. I've been begging this department to give the Mission what it deserves in terms of police presence all year long. And I have been told time and time and time and time again, there are no officers that we can send to Mission. It hurts, and I feel betrayed by the department. I feel betrayed by the mayor. I feel betrayed by the priorities of this city. It is not this Board of Supervisors' priorities. We want our residents safe.
Her name's Hillary. Her name's Hillary.
Let her finish. Shot, getting assaulted, getting killed, because in the Mission, Chief, it's not theft. In the Mission, people are getting shot and killed. In the Mission, people are getting beat up. In the Mission, people are dying.
No shit, Sherlock. Go on Twitter. Go on Twitter and look at her last tweet. Go to her account right there and look at her last tweet. Okay, zoom in. Her last tweet, 23, a peace out Twitter. Time is precious. Yeah. We'll be using time I spend on this forum having direct, productive conversations with the people of San Francisco. Mm. Good luck to you, lady.
Yeah.
So this is the part where, you know, as sad as it is, because a guy who created a great company that's created thousands of jobs, who moved to Miami because he didn't feel safe, in the middle of the night gets stabbed. A week and a half after this, comment she makes, and she's the same person. So now why don't you come out and apologize about your original policies?
Never.
About the fact that you felt about defunding the police. Now you want to talk about, I feel that they're not wanting to protect the city? Sarah Foster's an actress.
Yeah, I love that you found
Anybody who makes it on Vanity Fair, you're like left of left. You're part of the camp.
100%.
You're qualified. She slams San Francisco for being a shithole.
Weird.
So go to the bottom to read the entire quote of what she said right there. I have no words right there at the bottom. Go a little lower. I have no words. San Francisco is a complete shithole. I'm a registered Democrat and feel confident saying liberal politicians are ruining cities. Disgusting. My heart breaks for this family. Okay, and this is the daughter of David Foster, by the way.
16-time Grammy winner, David
16
Foster.
16-time.
Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. You started us off with UFC and all that. Funny story. So, you know, the guy freaking stole my keys. I'm running around. Yeah. Vinny and I are running around.
The whole time.
We go to the guest services, and the one guy in front of us at guest services, Vinny will remember this, he goes, "Oh, shit, what's up, man?
Yeah.
How you team at BBD? What's up?"
Jersey.
Huge fan. I'm like, "What's up, buddy?" He goes, "I'm a cop in Jersey.
Yeah.
I just came down here with my girl to have a great time, UFC." Boom. Tell Pat. I said, "What's up?" I said, "What's up?" He goes, "I got to tell you. You know how they say talk about defund the police? Let me tell you something." Was he talking about New Jersey police or New York?
I think he's talking about Jersey.
He said before COVID, he said they would get between 80,000 and 100,000 applicants to join the police force. He goes, "You know what it is now? In a year, 1,500.
Yep.
Did he not say those numbers?
Yeah, he did.
This is
he
his
did.
Story. I said, what? I go, that.
It's the same story.
Beyond ridiculous increase, decrease. Yeah. And I said, so how are you going to find police officers now? He goes, we're just going to have to lower standards.
No, you just got to move to Florida. Come on down here. We like cops.
His name is
He's giving bonuses.
His name is Nick Davis. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, shout out to Nick.
He told us the number, and Adam was like, whoa, the hell with my keys. What?
Yeah.
From 100 some thousand to 1,500. It's and mind you, so here's my question for everybody. Is people's hate for Trump more important than going back to not having the economy like this, to the way that everything is? Where are these voters at? So you're just happy because the mean attitude guy's not in. But you know what? As long as my feelings aren't hurt, I don't give a shit about the country. I don't give a shit about the war. I don't give a shit about the economy. Like, where the hell is your, what are you talking about? Yell at me all fucking day. Be whatever. As long as I'm safe and the economy's good and everything's all right, I'm happy. That's me.
Yeah. I think never underestimate the Republicans' ability to, like, shoot themselves in the foot, right? Or fuck up their chances to win. I mean, I would argue that the abortion argument is another example of that, right? I mean, what the hell, right?
McConnell.
They fucked up the midterm election, you know? It's going to happen again, right? I have a feeling that there's, you know, again, I hate to say it because I would like to see a change in administration, right? 330 million plus people in this country, and we're heading towards another, you know, election season where it's probably going to be Biden and Trump again, I suspect. Mm-hmm. Right?
Those are the favorites.
And that's incredible to me. But I'm a fan of the policies, right? You know, we gotta clear out the regulations. We gotta get the economy moving. We've gotta focus, be more strategic with China. And I just don't see how the numbers get there for Trump, unless there's just, you know, a more significant crisis.
Yeah.
Right. Because I think those voters who may have said, okay, I didn't vote for him the last time, but this, you know, current administration's not cutting it. I'm going to go for the Republicans. But I think those people will probably be turning up based on the abortion issue. And I think they're going to look at that. I think a lot of those suburban women and the others who were tired of the Trump chaos, who didn't vote for him this last time, maybe they could have shifted back to the Republican, you know, and vote for him. But I think that abortion issue is going to shut that possibility down. So I'm not particularly optimistic. We could end up with Biden Harris again. And that means we're going to end up with Harris.
How different is that position of what happened than what DeSantis' position is with that? Because is DeSantis' position on Roe v. Wade different than what happened right before midterms?
Yeah, I don't think DeSantis is. I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk about DeSantis being the guy, you know, possibly that could, you know, take this, but I don't think so. I just don't. I think outside of. I don't think he's going to carry. He could carry the nation. I don't know. I think that you're looking at a split in the numbers. They're going to be, you know, sitting in their foxholes shooting at each other during the primary, and that's going to damage both of them. And Here's what Newsom just said.
Yeah. Here's what Newsom agrees with you. Gavin Newsom predicts what will happen if Ron DeSantis takes on Trump. This is a Newsweek story. Rob, while I'm doing this, find what Trump just put out in Truth Social about Ron DeSantis. It's the nicest message he's had so far, by the way. California Governor Gavin Newsom predicts that if DeSantis challenges Trump for 2024 Republican presidential nomination, DeSantis will be defeated by Trump. Newsom said on MSNBC Inside with Jen Psaki, he's going to get rolled by Trump. Trump's just going to roll him. Newsom criticized DeSantis for attacking Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who charged Trump with 34 counts of falsifying business documents. Newsom said DeSantis looked weak for doing so and advised DeSantis against challenging Trump for the GOP nomination. He suggested DeSantis wait a few years and actually do some of the hard work, which actually includes governing, not just identity and culture war. So, Mike, are you the kind of guy that likes this Newsom guy out of California?
Oh, God, no. Newsom is, when he talks about DeSantis should just focus on governing, good God. I'm in and out of Los Angeles and to be fair, San Francisco on a regular basis, and two fantastic cities that are just being driven into the ground. And, you know, that's all under Newsom's watch. Like, the guy, he's got a, you know, a great head of hair, you know, God bless him. But I'm sure he positions himself where he's imagining himself to be the guy, right? Nobody was probably happy about Buttigieg, you know, taken a lot of, you know, shots during the past year than Newsom, because I think he really feels like he's the replacement candidate.
100%. Right?
And, you know, he's I'm sure he's excited about the fact that, you know, I don't know. What do I know about politics other than you have to look at results, right? And Newsom doesn't have the results, right? So I don't understand, but it doesn't matter anymore. It's all about performative art, right? Mm-hmm. It's theater. And people, you talk about how the San Francisco woman there, you know, how can she say one thing and then talk out of the other side of her mouth, right? Shortly yep. thereafter. It's because nobody gives a shit anymore, right? Yep. Nobody fact checks. Nobody, and you know, to your point, you get what you get. You know, you vote for, sure. you know, you vote for. How do they end up with Brandon Johnson in Chicago? How does that work?
Have you heard what this guy says?
He's
by the way?
Nuts.
Yeah. Have you listened to some of the stuff this guy says about cops and?
Yep.
I mean, it's worse. But
it's a Soros guy. But it's one of Soros' guys. Of and course. You saw who visited the White House 12 or 14 times last
Soros' son,
under
right?
Biden. Soros' son.
His boy. Yeah.
Which, by the way, a lot of people think, well, when Soros is no longer here because he's 90-some years old, his son is as radical, if not apparently more radical than him. He's meeting with the chief of staff, and he's had all these other meetings. Yeah. And by the way, can you pull up what actually I sent you about what Trump said about DeSantis, I just sent it to you, the link. There you go. If you can pull that up with the hill.
Oh, yeah.
Here's what he just said. Zoom in a little bit. Trump discourages DeSantis as candidacy would only hurt Republican Party. Okay, a different approach. Here's what he says. Ron DeSantis is a young man who is not doing well against me in the polls, to put it mildly. I believe that if he decides to run for president, which will only hurt and somewhat divide a Republican Party, he will lose the cherished and massive MAGA vote, he's already saying it right up front, and never be able to successfully run for office again. I don't know about that. If he remains governor, which is what Florida voters assumed, it will be a whole different story. Just saying, but again, who knows? Some people read into this and they said the fact that he's hinting at, if you don't run, I'll have you as my VP. Some are saying that'll never happen. But what do you think about what he just said here about DeSantis?
It's one of the nicer things he said in the last few months, is not calling him Meatball Ron or Ron DeSanctimonious or, you know, peddling stories about him hanging out with underage women. So that's good for him. Which there's actually some truth, you know, to use some truth social in it, that he might lose the massive, cherished MAGA vote. One of the things I actually wanted to bring up with DeSantis that you just brought about, and this is one of the things, because I've been an advocate of saying I would vote for DeSantis. Mm. Have you heard about the fact that, because you brought up abortions and how like that's going to potentially shoot Republicans shoot themselves in the foot, especially to suburban women or just women across the country? You know, it's supposed to be a red wave in the midterms. It ended up being like a red like drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Florida, backed by DeSantis, is trying to pass a 6-week abortion bill. 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Have you heard about this? Pull this up. And apparently it was approved. Now, listen, you can debate the abortion all you want, but 6 weeks. Some women, you know, don't even know they're pregnant within a month, the first month. And I think the stats show 43% of pregnancies of abortions happen within 6 weeks. 36% happen between 7 and 9 weeks. 13% between 10 and 13 weeks. So I think a lot of people have sort of used like the 12-week number as sort of a, you know, comfortable number that you can wrap your head around. But 6 weeks, so if, back to your point about DeSantis, if that's your message, that you're going to be more of a moderate and, you know, kind of not play to the MAGA wing, but also get some of the disaffected liberals and independents on your side, a 6-week abortion bill? You think that's going to get women to vote for you?
Yeah, no, I know.
Homie, don't play that.
Well, and this is why it's always been one of those issues, right? It's like you're talking about, you know, reformed entitlements, right? I mean, every time the Republican Party wades into the abortion issue, you know, I don't get how do they not look at this and go, okay, you know what, we got to sit down and come up with, nobody lives in the fucking center anymore. So nobody, you don't have anybody in Washington saying, let's all sit down as reasonable people and come up with something, right, that makes sense, that both sides can live with.
You have one centrist, you have Joe Manchin.
Yeah. Basically, that's it. Yeah. But I don't think, I don't know that, you know, I.
Bless you.
Look, if DeSantis was the Republican nominee, yeah, I'd vote for him, right? But I think Trump's correct in the sense that, you know, all he's got to do is kind of, you know, start that attack plan. And, you know, his voting base is not going to suddenly embrace Ron DeSantis. Right. So there's a there's a real problem coming down the pike for the Republican Party that, you know, typically they'll just ignore for a while. And then, you know, it'll be sort of all hands on deck and panic, you know, leading up to the election. And
but if you're DeSantis, you don't know what's going to happen 4 or 5 years from now. You can't predict, you know, Florida might have a hurricane. It might be an absolute mess here. You never know what kind of 6-week abortion bill all of a sudden approval ratings go down. Right now, his stock is as high as ever.
That's, yeah.
You have to seize the moment. Carpe diem.
Oh, yeah, because I don't think, you just nailed it. Like, think about it. If Trump runs this one and Ron doesn't, he's going to be
literally be irrelevant.
It could people just be like, okay, just stay in Florida, like whatever. But just it's crazy though that's all the Democratic Party has to offer is news.
Unless if Trump does back him up 100% to run afterwards. Because think about it this way. Say Trump runs 4 years, okay?
Okay.
And DeSantis goes behind him. I want you to think about this here real quick. Say DeSantis says, all right, I'll get involved a little bit just to get a little bit of experience, and I'll run. And apparently he can't run until July because he has to get his governorship job in place before he announces that he's running. Some date like that. I think it's July or June. But I think it's July. So he goes in, and they duke it out for 5 months, whatever the time, 6 months, 5 months. And then within 2-3 months, okay, guess what? Game. It's yours. Perfect. They talk to each other just like Ted Cruz lined up. And Ted Cruz like, let's go, let's roll. Trump can flip real quick. If you're going to get his back, he'll flip, right? So DeSantis comes and backs him up, and they run. Now watch. During Trump's second term, if DeSantis got his back 100%, guess what Trump's going to do for DeSantis?
Put him
Trump's going to be his number one flag carrier and help him become president. And then DeSantis can have 8 years, which means it'll be Trump, DeSantis, 12 years. Now, that doesn't mean a DeSantis' camp listening to this, they're saying, oh, you have no clue what the hell you're talking about. Maybe you're right. Maybe we don't. We're just talking, guys. We're not in your world. And, you know, and you're right about the fact that this guy was the number one governor in what he did, above and beyond everybody else. We're in Florida because of this guy. You're from L.A. and New York. I'm from L.A. and I lived in Texas for 5 years. And I like the governor in Texas. He does a great job, Abbott. But we moved here because it gave the balance of Florida and Texas together. I love the beach in Idaho, but I love it in Florida more, right?
So favorite beaches.
This
Idaho beach life.
That's right. This is the difference between this. Now, if you find this clip with Biden being asked about running for re-election, I don't know if you saw that. If you have that.
At the Easter egg hunt?
Yeah, he's at the Easter egg
hunt. What is he saying, Pat? What is he saying?
While he's looking for it, I'll just read it to you on what happened with this. So I'm planning on running. By the way, you have to really understand what he's saying. Matter of fact, I dare you to fully understand what he's saying. Go ahead and play the clip. Watch it here.
That's
the
doctor.
This is a fantastic event, one of my favorite of the year. I was just wondering, Mr. President, will you be taking part in the Easter egg rolls after 2024?
Well, I plan on at least 3 or 4 more Easter egg rolls.
At least 3 or 4 more?
Maybe 5.
Maybe 5?
maybe 6. So, what the hell?
Are you saying that you would be taking part in our upcoming election in 2024.
Well, I'll either be rolling egg or, you know, being the you know, the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a brother out. Make some news for me.
I plan on running now, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
All right. Well,
what if you hold back up 10 seconds? What do you say?
I'm planning on running.
What if you said, Al, if you don't vote for me, then you ain't black.
Either roll an egg or push one out.
In our upcoming election in 2024.
Well, I'll either be rolling egg or, you know, being the you know, the guy who's pushing them out.
Come on, help a brother
this
out.
This is the part right here.
I plan on running, Al, but we're not prepared to announce it yet.
I
was waiting for him to go, and Al, if you don't vote for me, you ain't black. I was waiting for that to come out because he loves saying.
Well, that's the announcement. It's not the official announcement.
He just said it without saying it with an egg coming out, whatever the hell that.
Yeah, how's he pushing that egg out?
But you know, I just wish we had one honest interview.
At least if he maybe he identifies as a chicken.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that, Pat.
Yeah. I'm not.
Look, I just wish one time one person interviewing just stops and goes like this. Hey, I'm sorry, Mr. President. What the hell are you talking about?
Say what, buddy?
Yeah, exactly. Nobody ever checks him. Trump was always yelled at by Jim Acosta and everybody. Not one time.
By the way, he didn't talk like this before. I've heard him give speeches.
He's getting worse.
No, I've heard him give speeches where you're kind of like, okay, good. You know, he's got some stuff that's solid. He didn't talk like this. This is recent.
And Pat, notice, he's going to be 82, right? By the next election.
If he gets reelected, he'll be 86 years old at the end of his term.
Oh, my God.
That 86 year old
has
president.
To be a concern.
What do you mean? Of course it is.
If you can push an egg out at 86,
you got to respect it.
You should be president, man. He's doing, look, he successfully ran a campaign from his basement for the most part.
Of course.
And, you know, again, the Democrats, you know, love them or hate them.
Yep.
Right. They tend to do messaging and campaigns and communication well because they stick to it, right? Mm-hmm. They don't tend to splinter. And so I think his strategists are basically saying, look, why jump in the fight right now? Hey, take all the time you want, right? You're in the White House already. You don't need to announce yet. And he could push this off, and while he's doing that, he's kind of freezing out the other options, like Newsom and these others, right?
Yeah,
So we've got, you know, we've got a really interesting situation here where I think both sides are kind of getting locked in to before we even get to the primaries.
But shit's about to get so dirty. It's going to get so dirty.
I know.
I think this next one's going to be nasty. I think it's going to be nasty. Anyways, we got to get to the end of the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
So Nathaniel Rodriguez gave a $100 super chat. Good conversation. Andrew Huff, there's not a regime that the U.S. via the CIA and the State Department have wanted to coup and topple. BRICS and the recent peace deals between countries led by China and Russia, plus Trump as president, why they don't want him in 2024. I guess we'll find out to see what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Mike, what are you working on right now so people can follow you? What are you working on? Outside of your new office you're building in San Francisco, but outside of that, what else are you working on?
Building my secret lair in the Mission District, because the representation seems solid.
Fantastic.
Yeah. By the way, this thing goes so fast. Great, it's such a great show. I mean, it just moves so damn fast that I'm surprised that we're at the end of it.
You're a fan favorite, by the way.
Oh,
you're a
really?
Fan favorite. Not only do we love you, everybody loves you. You're a fan favorite.
Clearly, you're
10K live right now.
Your viewers are clearly terrible judges of character and entertainment value. But you know what? For all your information and security needs, it's Portman Square Group. I got to say that
because
why not? That's a great one. And then I thank you very much, Rob. I pushed out an audio book a couple months ago called Company Rules. It's a very easy listen. They asked me to do an audiobook because I didn't know enough big words to do a whole book. And I narrate it myself, so it's very soothing.
Sick. That voice I could go to sleep
Company
with.
Company rules
and
or
people
every
do.
No.
Yeah, and people
you don't
do.
Need it soothing. Yeah.
Everything I know about business, I learned from the CIA.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's got just some principles I took away. Look, what happened was I got out of the agency, and everybody in my old colleagues who were fantastic, I loved my time in, but they were all like, what the hell are you going to do now? You have no, how are you going to, what?
Yeah, you sit home?
And I had to leave because I was raising a daughter, as a single dad, and I thought, okay, you know, I got to do something that keeps me close to home somewhat. But all my guys were like, yeah, I don't know what the hell you're going to be doing because your skill set is not going to transfer to the private sector. And what I found was, after starting a business, was that there were certain things that I'd learned from the agency that actually transferred very well to the private sector, right? These were my rules. It's not like the agency hands you a book that says, here's the company rules when you first sign on. These were just the things I took away. And hopefully people enjoy it. They take some bit away and it helps them, and not just in business, but in private life.
I love it. Well, Rob, let's make sure we put the link all over the place, chat and description. Folks, go order Mike Baker's book, and I'm sure Mike will be doing this again in the next 17 months going into the election, man. It's going to be wild. Anyways, thanks for coming out.
Thank you, man.
Gang, have a good one. We'll do it again on Thursday. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.